Chapter 10. It felt like only moments had passed when Su'ulo woke Han to take a watch shift. And a few hours after that, when the sun was rising in an uncharacteristically clear sky, Han finally woke Kira. "Already?" she said, yawning and stretching.
"It's daytime out there," he whispered, so as not to wake Su'ulo, who was curled up on the table, the blanket kicked down to his feet. "Maybe we should get going."
"No, get some sleep," Kira said, rising. "We're safe here for a while. Rest while you can. I'll keep watch and come up with a plan."
So that's what they did. Han was asleep again as soon as his head hit the cot, and he didn't stir until someone shook him awake.
"Han, get up, you lazy gwerp," Su'ulo said in Hatties. "Kira needs our help."
Through sheer force of will, Han got to his feet. His muscles were stiff and sore, and his very bones ached. No surprise, since they'd been running all day and night with very little sleep or food. Speaking of food, something smelled delicious. Kira was at the table, and as he sat beside her, she handed him an eel skewer dripping with sauce. "I picked up some food for us this afternoon."
"It's afternoon?" he said.
He grabbed his skewer and bit down. Sauce dripped down his chin, and he caught it with a finger, not wanting to waste a single drop. It didn't taste particularly good, but it was better than the white worm breakfast sludge, and he needed the energy it would provide.
"With what money?"
he asked with his mouth full. "I always keep a few credits hidden here," she said. "When I can." Light trickled into the space around the sorry excuse for a door, and through an air vent above their heads. A few things about Kira's safe house had escaped his notice in the dark, like the dried flowers sticking out of an old soup can on the shelf, the ratty cargo blanket that someone had embroidered with swirls of blue thread, and hanging above the head of the cot, a chandelier of sorts, made of old wire and bits of colored glass. Kira loved this place, and she loved beautiful things. Gruffly, he said,
"Su'ulo said you needed our help."
"I've figured out how we can get back into town," she said. "But I'm not sure where to go next or what we should do. I need your help deciding our next move."
"I know what we should do," Han said. "Run away to Corvella. We could get lost in that city easy. No one there knows us."
"Is running away your answer to everything?" Kira said. Han frowned.
"I never run away from a fight. Well," he amended, "unless I'm pretty sure I'm going to die."
"Anyway, I've no doubt our descriptions are all over Corvella, too," she said. "They might not know about Su'ulo yet." She indicated the Rodian with a lift of her chin. He sat at the other end of the table, fiddling with something he'd yanked off the speeder. "But you and I are made the moment we're out in the open."
"So what do you suggest?" Han asked.
"We need more information before we can decide anything. About that data cube. About why everyone wants it so badly. Your friend Tool tossed it to you. Said to run for your life. That means he trusts you."
"He might not be functional anymore," Han pointed out.
He didn't like the way saying that made him feel.
"Last I saw him, he was getting blasted."
"What about the people he worked for? I think if we contacted them, let them know that Tool entrusted the data cube to you for a reason, they'd be forced to listen to us. They might extend some trust to us, too."
The same wind that had blown the clouds from the Corellian skies rattled the fuselage scrap that covered their doorway. Icy air gusted against Han's cheeks. Su'ulo looked up from his project and said,
"Finding the droid Gotra is a better idea than tangling with a smuggling syndicate or the Empire. And even though none of them are looking for me, Lady Proxima has figured out by now that I'm helping you. So my vote is to contact Tool or his employer."
"What did he say?" asked Kira.
"He votes we contact the droid Gator."
"Fine. How?"
Han rubbed at his chin.
"Tool might still be alive."
"Even if he's not," Su'ulo said, "I might be able to pull something from his memory banks, or salvage his comm, find out who he communicated with last."
The thought of sifting through the dead metal shell that used to be his friend made the eel skewer sit poorly in Han's belly.
I guess, he said,
and relayed Su'ulo's words to Kira. It would be a huge risk, going back to the foundry, she said. Han shrugged.
Maybe we'll get lucky.
I'll ask the Force for its blessing, Su'ulo said.
Han took the last bite of skewer, wiped his mouth with his sleeve, and said,
You sure that's how the Force works?
Su'ulo slumped in his chair.
No.
Then why?
The spines on his head fluttered.
I don't know anything, okay? No one will tell me anything about it. No one knows...
He swallowed hard, as if collecting himself.
I read every page that was on display, and it just made sense.
Wore dirty robes. It was like
Long
my
beard.
Eyes were opened,
he was always
and I knew the Force was real.
Pamphlets. One day I finally took one. It led me to an underground museum in Coruscant. Everything there was illegal, and I shouldn't have gone, but I was just a kid, barely 12 years old. I looked around. They had this book, well, an ancient manuscript, called The Annals of Light and Being. I read every page that was on display, and it just made sense. It was like my eyes were opened, and I knew the Force was real.
What's he talking about, Han? Kira asked.
Converting to some religion.
Then, a couple years later, Imperials found out about the museum. They raided the place. The owner disappeared. The street preacher disappeared. The annals disappeared. No one would tell me what happened to them, and no one could answer my questions about the Force. But I know it's real. I don't know how it works, but it helps me. Every day, I can feel it.
What's he saying?
He's talking about his feelings.
Ew, she said.
Listen, pal, I don't care if you pray to a Force or a god or whatever. Can't hurt, right?
Han expected a look of gratitude or something for his being so gracious. Instead, Su'ulo's one good antenna drooped with disappointment.
Sure,
he said.
Can't hurt.
So what about the foundry? Kira said. It's a risk, but not so risky as continuing to fly blind. I say we go for it. See if we can find Tool. Make contact with the droid Gotra. There were so many reasons not to do it. The Kaldana thugs could be waiting for him. He could be faced with Tool's non-functioning carcass. It was too near Whiteworm territory. But Kira was right. They were flying blind, and that was going to get them killed faster than anything.
I agree. Su'ulo?
I agree.
Han looked to Kira.
You have a plan for getting us there?
I do. I thought about it all night.
This ought to be good. So let's hear it.
Kira smiled, that enormous smile that was like the sun bursting through Corellian clouds. We take the speeder. Han and Su'ulo gaped at her.
That's it? All night and that's what you came up with?
Hey, a big part of figuring out the perfect plan is eliminating all the bad plans, she said. And I can assure you, I thoroughly examined and discarded at least 10 alternate possibilities.
But that speeder is bright green, he protested. With Rodian antennae. Not exactly the best way to lay low. Everyone who sees that thing is going to remember it.
Yeah, we'll have to take off the antennae. For now, she added hastily when Su'ulo started to rise from the table. We can reattach them later. You can do that, right? Su'ulo mumbled that he could.
Rizzo is probably looking everywhere for his speeder, Han said. B has freed him from the engine compartment by now, and it's a good bet he'll be mad as hell, and out for revenge.
She shrugged. It's not like he'll go to Corsac for help locating an illegal vehicle, right? And he's looking for his Rodian speeder, driven by his Rodian brother. Now that most of the customizations have been stripped, we'll be in a normal speeder, driven by you. Well, almost normal. It will still be bright green. But this is Corellia. Everyone customizes their speeder a little. We'll blend right in. Pan considered this and found a flaw in her reasoning.
You said descriptions of us are planet-wide now, even as far as Corvella. We're sure to be recognized.
We'll have to wear hoods, she conceded. I was going to send Saulo into the Bottoms Market to pick up a few cloaks. We'll wear driving goggles, too.
How will we pay for the cloaks and goggles?
Saulo held up the project he was working on.
Bounce package,
the Rhodian said.
I've modified it to work on droids and personal lifts, as well as speeders. I'll sell it in the market and buy some cloaks.
Han was a little sorry to see the bounce package go. It had really saved their necks the night before. Not to mention made him feel, if only for a moment, like he was flying.
You've thought this through, he said.
I have. They could keep running, but everything would eventually catch up to them. They needed to fix this, and in order to do that, they had to know more.
All right, fine, he said. We'll just drive right up to the foundry like we belong there. When in doubt, brazen it out, right?
A few hours later, they were cloaked and goggled and speeding toward the foundry. The sun was already low in the sky. They'd let Han sleep a bit, and gathering their new clothes had taken some time. It would have been nice if they could have afforded some fresh water for bathing, too. But you couldn't have everything.
We'll get there right on time for shift change, Kira explained.
We don't have employee identities,
Saulo pointed out.
We can't just walk right in.
Sure we can,
Han said, steering into a busy thoroughfare. No one gave them a second glance.
So far, so good. I've walked into the foundry plenty of times. You just stand in the employment line. Each day they pick a bunch of people to do some work under the table. Mostly cleanup, sometimes testing. The pay is terrible. And if you're injured or killed, too bad for you. But it's a way in.
How do we make sure we get picked? Kira asked.
Han smiled at her.
Trust me.
Something's wrong, Saulo said.
What do you mean?
Han asked. Saulo pointed to a group of stormtroopers marching through a fish market.
And there.
He pointed to a droid walking into an apartment building.
That's a maintenance droid, and it's carrying a gun.
Kira smacked Saulo's hand down.
Don't point, she said. It will draw attention.
But do you see? He persisted. There are more beings packing firepower today than I've ever seen since my family arrived on this awful planet.
I see it, Kira said. I've been noticing it too.
Han couldn't tell if she actually understood Saulo, or if she put it together on a hunch.
We need to watch each other's backs going into the foundry.
It took them less than an hour to get past Old Town and into the manufacturing district. The foundry was a huge complex of buildings. Smokestacks that stretched as high as skyscrapers belched dirty smoke. Freighters took off and landed in the distance, hauling recently manufactured components through the foundry's small, dedicated spaceport. Other components were hauled out on freight speeders. A line of them headed toward the outskirts of the city, to the shipyards, where component parts would be assembled into all sorts of starships, but mostly light freighters. Han parked their speeder in the designated area. Saulo pulled out his data pad and encrypted the console controls. A good encryption wasn't a guarantee against theft, but it would make amateurs and street thieves think twice. The three of them kept their hoods up and their goggles on as they strode toward the massive metal gate and the line of ragged hopefuls waiting outside. There were hundreds of them, waiting to see if they'd get picked for work.
You sure you can get us in? Kira asked.
There are a lot more people than I expected, he admitted.
Han!
Hey, we might get lucky, he said with a shrug.
Saulo began praying to the Force. The sun was setting beyond the spaceport, taking the day's little warmth with it. Hopeful workers huddled close, hands stuffed in sleeves and pockets, hoods up, threadbare jackets clipped tight. Everyone was weathered and wrinkled, hungry and cold.
See? We've had some luck already, Han whispered as they got in line. This cold snap gives us a good reason to keep these cloaks on. And our driving goggles look like safety eyewear.
Kira gave him a look that could curdle milk. A klaxon sounded, signaling end of shift. A moment later, the gate slid open, and exhausted workers poured out, anxious to get home for the night. After the flood of beings became a mere trickle, it was followed by a group of humans in stiff blue uniforms. One woman held a data pad. A man carried a portable loudhailer. The fellow with the loudhailer held it up and shouted,
"We're looking for some duff rats tonight. Volunteers, please step forward."
A murmur rose from the crowd, and everyone shifted in place. Fully a third of the supplicants turned and left. "I take it no one wants to be a ducked rat?" Kira whispered to Han.
"It's the worst job in the foundry," he whispered back.
Then he stepped forward, and Kira and Su'ulo followed. Over 100 volunteers remained. The woman with the data pad pointed at a few and told them to go home.
"Too big," she said. "We need small bodies for small spaces."
Han pushed his friends forward.
"I've got some small bodies right here," he called out.
Then he bent his knees and hunched a little, trying to look slighter.
"We're experienced crawlers. We'll get those ducts clean for you."
The man with the loudhailer waved them through. They hurried toward the entrance before anyone could change their minds or get a better look at them.
"We did it," Kira said.
"I told you we'd get lucky," Han said.
"The Force heard my prayers," Su'ulo said.
Han rolled his eyes.
"So what are duct rats anyway?" Kira asked.
"Beings who crawl around the air vents and machinery intakes, cleaning them of ash and soot, chemical residue, the occasional life form."
"And it's dangerous?" she asked.
"Yeah, it's really easy to take a wrong turn and find yourself in the intake of a live machine. And sometimes people get a bad cough, the killing kind."
"Why don't they use droids?"
"The particulates tend to gum up their joints, among other things. Besides, good droids are expensive. It's easier and cheaper to just use desperate people."
They reached the entrance, where a Keldor stood sentry, his breather mask wheezing with age and grime.
"We're here for duct cleaning duty," Han said. "Which way?"
The Keldor opened the door for them, revealing a massive, bustling assembly floor. But he pointed right toward a branching hallway. The three of them strode into the factory.
"I can't believe that worked," Kira said.
"Me neither," Han muttered.
"What?"
"I said I told you it would."
Kira lowered her voice.
"Now we need a distraction, so we can slip away to the basement."
The air was hot and dry, a welcome change from outside at first. But within moments, Han felt sweat breaking out on his neck. Everything smelled of smoke and overheated lubricant, all tinged with a sharp, metallic bite. Parts clanked and conveyor belts groaned. Stamping presses crashed down on metal sheets, and drill bits screamed holes into stubborn joists. Mechanical arms set in ceiling mounts moved blindingly fast, sorting and tagging, dropping adhesive here, trimming away excess there. Through it all, a flock of droids and organics checked equipment, supervised conveyors, cleaned metal shavings and black oil from the floor. Everyone was haggard and dazed, going through the motions on autopilot. Han didn't see a single smile or hear a word of conversation. Many were missing fingers or limbs. One Besalisk fellow had a constellation of burn scars across his cheek. He'd obviously gotten a face full of hot metal shavings. The foundry was a joyless, luckless place, and for the thousandth time, Han was glad he'd joined the White Worms instead of embracing the factory life.
"Han, any idea for a distraction?" Kira prompted. "We could accidentally crash one of these conveyors. See that guy pushing the janitor cart?"
She was pointing to a human male, no older than they were, pushing a large cart full of scrap. He paused occasionally to sweep something up. When his cart was full, he'd take it to the smelter. She said,
"We could spill the scrap onto the belt where they're making those thingies."
"Alluvial dampers."
"Whatever. All those shavings and scrap bits would stop the conveyor in its tracks, right?
Right,
Su'lo said.
But then we'd...
A scream erupted, overpowering the noise of the factory. Then came a heart-rending keen that made the hair on the back of Han's neck stand up straight. Everyone on the assembly floor left their posts to congregate around something. A red light came on, pulsing from the ceiling high above, and an emergency siren flooded their ears. What was that? Kira mouthed. But Han couldn't hear her over the sound of the siren. Han smelled blood. A moment later, bodies parted, and Han glimpsed a man lying on the floor in a pool of crimson, clutching at his empty elbow socket. His severed forearm lay stiff beside him.
That's our distraction, Han said in her ear. Let's go! The basement is this way!
Han hastened them down the side of the building toward the back, where an access corridor would lead them to a freight lift.
I guess we got lucky again, he said.
Our luck was that man's loss, Su'lo pointed out. That great philosopher Flacial Krina speculates that luck is a finite thing, to be doled out in increments. Maybe the galaxy's luck will run out someday.
Su'lo, remind me to never get an education, Han said.
Better him than us, Kira said. And even though Han agreed with her, it didn't quite sit right. They reached the corridor, turned right, and came to a turbo lift. Han was about to activate the console when the door slid open, and a tall, white-haired man wearing a management uniform strode out.
Blast, Kira whispered. What are you doing here? He demanded.
Then his head cocked as he recognized the siren wailing in the next building.
Some guy lost an arm back there, Han said. Blood went everywhere. Conveyor belt got gummed up. Threw alluvial damper parts all over the floor. Knocked a few people in the head. The shift supervisor sent us to grab all the cleaning and medical supplies we can carry.
Kira added, he said there's a supply closet this way? Han resisted the urge to kick her. When lying, it was always best to keep your embellishments to a minimum. But the white-haired man thumbed toward the lift.
Down two levels, out the door and to your right. Hells, really? The alluvial damper line. We haven't had a dismemberment on that line for almost 2 years.
And with that, he strode away without giving them a second glance.
That could have gone very badly, Kira said, staring after him. But it didn't.
She narrowed her eyes at Han. You're very good at talking your way out of things. It didn't sound like a compliment. And that rankled, because maybe he wanted it to be. A little respect from her shouldn't be so hard. Not that her opinion mattered. It wasn't like she was his friend or anything.
Su'lo directed the lift to the basement level, which turned out to be a damp, cluttered storage space for old assembly works. It reminded Han a little of the Whiteworm Lair, with its defunct machines and rusty pipes, and everywhere the slick sheen of seeping water.
This way,
Han said, and he took them to the door that he knew led into the underground bunker, the one where Tool had been shot while throwing the data cube to him.
Be ready for anything, he said,
and he keyed the door open. The sick, sweet scent of carrion nearly overpowered them.
What in holy moons is that?
Su'lo said, waving a hand in front of his face.
Dead body, Han said. So watch your step.
The room was pitch black. All that blaster fire must have destroyed the lighting. We have to close the door behind us, Kira whispered. She was right on his heels. We have to.
I'll fire up my data pad,
Su'lo offered. And sure enough, within moments, their way was lit by a soft blue glow. Kira closed the door while Han took stock. The floor was sticky with blood. Blaster marks scorched the walls. There was only one dead body. Han would never have recognized him, except for the ridiculous mustache that still drifted down his face, even in death. Mustache guy was definitely the source of that awful smell. It had only been a little over a day, but he was in a ripe state of decomposition, thanks to the foundry's hot atmosphere, and the fact that blaster fire had ripped open his belly, spilling his guts on the floor. Tiny rodent paw prints smattered the floor around him.
Poor fellow, came Kira's voice.
Han had seen worse. Still, he had to look away. No sign of the Caldana woman. She must have been one of the people who'd chased him into the sewer. "Tool," he whispered. Saulo's datapad only lit the space around him, leaving the edges of the room in darkness. Han heard, or maybe only thought he heard, a slight mechanical whirring. "Tool," he said again. The sound came again, stretched out and slippery, as if coming from a dying power source.
"Han."
"Tool! Saulo, over here! Can you light this corner for me? I think he... Oh, hell."
Tool was crumpled on the floor, legs splayed, his back against the wall. His head drooped down to his chest, and his welder had broken off. It lay dismembered on the ground beside him. He was badly dented and covered in scorch marks, and the light indicator for his power core was dim, blinking out at irregular intervals.
"Han,"
Tool said. His voice garbled and scratched.
"Need repair."
"Help me turn him over," Han ordered. "I need to open his access compartment."
Kira and Saulo bent to help. They grunted and heaved, but Tool hardly budged.
"This is the oldest droid I've ever seen,"
Saulo said, catching his breath.
"He has a fusion power core. That's ancient. I bet a collector would pay top credits for..."
"Less talking, more lifting," Han said as they tried again.
This time they managed to get him onto his shoulder. Han ripped open the access compartment in his back and rerouted all the power from his legs and attachments to his receptors and memory banks.
"That's exactly how I would have done it,"
Saulo said.
"Sorry, pal," Han said to Tool. "This will leave you paralyzed for now, but at least you'll be able to talk to us."
"Could not move anyway,"
Tool said, and Han was relieved to hear the clarity in his voice.
"A blaster severed the central servo motor cable in my back. I was helpless even to reroute power. I'm very glad you came when you did."
"We can fix you up," Han assured him.
"His fusion core shut down due to overheating,"
Saulo said, peering into the compartment.
"He's been on auxiliary power all day. Once the core cools off, I can get it humming again. Tool, is it all right with you if my datapad talks to your internal processor? It's the fastest way for me to run a diagnostic."
"Please do," Tool said. "But I will thank you to stay out of my memory banks. I assume you came to get more information about the data cube. Do you still have it, Han? Does it remain intact?"
"I have it. Well, Saulo does. It's intact," Han assured him.
"And we do need information," Kira said. "Will you help us?" Tool cocked his head, as if his photoreceptors weren't working quite right.
"Ah, yes, the girl. Everyone is looking for you, too. I heard a lot of chatter about you both on the HoloNet before my fusion core powered off."
"Why?" Kira pleaded. "Why does everyone want to kill us over that thing?"
"Oh, that is nice," Tool said flatly. "Very nice, what a relief."
"I'm powering your cooling system with my datapad," Saulo said. "But once your fusion core is running, I'll need a recharge in return."
"Of course."
"The data cube?" Kira prompted. "There's a dead guy with cooked intestines on the floor over there because of it, and I want to know why." Han put a hand on her shoulder.
"Easy, Kira."
Once she was on a mission, it was all she thought about. She was like one of Rebalt's hounds with a biscuit. Sometimes that could be a good thing, but other times, like now, you had to feel your way through a situation. And Tool was not going to talk easily, especially if Kira bludgeoned him with questions. To the droid, he said,
"You're not supposed to talk about it, are you?"
"I am not."
"This is very important to you."
"It is."
"You threw the cube to me, remember? Because you trust me. Which turned out to be a smart move. I'm back, and the cube is fine."
"What are you going to do with it?"
"That's why we need your help. Without more information, we don't know what to do."
"Wow," said Saulo, shifting through the data on his pad. "You've made a lot of improvements. You're like an illegal street speeder, ugly on the outside, but full of surprises.
Han could swear that Tool was beaming with pleasure.
Thank you,
the droid intoned. The cube? Kira prodded. Tool, what do you think we should do with it?
Give it to the droid Gotra, of course. We won that bid fair and square.
She took a deep breath. Okay, let's start there. What is the droid Gotra? Tool said nothing.
I have something that might change your mind about talking to us,
said Siulo, pulling a big metal lump out of his pocket.
What is that?
Tool asked.
This,
Siulo said,
is a hollow flame's attachment.
He flicked a switch. Its tiny projectors lit up, and flames danced all through the room, lighting the walls in dreamlike blue. The blood on the floor glinted slickly.
Oh,
said Tool.
My.
I could program it to contour itself to your shape.
I don't know of any other droids who have one,
Tool said.
You'd be one of a kind, Han assured him.
Suddenly, Tool couldn't talk fast enough.